This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 4th of January, 1959. The title of this lecture is Overdact Motivator Sequence. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. I personally don't think you will be quite so happy at the end of this lecture, because this is about overt acts and motivator sequences. But I'm glad to see you very cheerful at the beginning of the lecture. Very glad to see you happy, comfortable. Now that I've gotten all of your engrams out of re-stimulation, I don't see any particular reason why you should have any further engrams. Probably a lot of you went clear just in the last lecture. But you know that funny little feeling you got there just toward the end of the lecture, that there might be something there which you didn't want to confront. Well, I want to give you some advice. Don't confront it until after the Congress. Now, if you are actually eager to find out what your bank is all about, you know, that's quite an idea. I bet there's somebody here that doesn't know what his bank's all about. I'll bet you there are people present who don't know what happened to them in the 16th century. It's a new thought. I'll bet worse than that. I'll bet you there are people here, I'll bet you, who are not at all sure there was a 16th century. And I'll bet you there's somebody here who, if they did run into it, it would seem awfully unreal. Now, the overt act motivator sequence, subject of this lecture, and it's not aimed or leveled at engrams, so come up to present time. Engrams are all very well. An engram is simply a moment of pain, unconsciousness, and exteriorization in Scientology. Very simple mental image picture in constant play. Nothing much to it. Hardly anything to know about that. But why is it that some people have a feeling like there is pressure on them? Have you ever had that feeling? You ever wondered why there was pressure on you? You ever felt driven? Not like this, but like this. You ever felt driven? Did you ever feel that there was some corner of the perimeter around you into which you didn't quite dare look? You ever had that feeling? Did you ever feel that life was dogging you? Now, this is a more outrageous question. Have you ever felt that you were victimized? Now, the mechanism of how not to feel victimized is what we're going to take up right now. Motivator, definition of that which has happened to the person. Overt act, definition of that which a person has done to somebody else. Overt act, out there. Motivator. Now, the reason we call it a motivator overt act sequence is because normally individuals feel that something happened to them and then they had to do something to somebody else because of it. And they express this in, I know I was awfully cruel, but I was totally justified. I know I had to shoot him, fire him, arrest him, scold him, bawl him out, but then he merited it. I know I didn't like chloroforming him. He'd been a good dog, but after he chewed up the rug, get the idea. Well, the chew up the rug is the justification of having chloroformed the dog. You get the idea? The overt act is chloroforming the dog, and the dog chewing up your rug is the motivator. Now, there's another two sides to this situation. What about the situation where you did something to somebody without a motivator? We call this is all in the history of man, by the way. We call this a dead-dead-ex situation. Now, what happens in that particular case is the individual does something, and then he has to explain it. He goes out here and he shoots somebody or poisons somebody or divorces somebody, something like this, and then he has to explain it. Well, I don't suppose anybody here has ever done anything like that. But what have you done is much harder to answer than what has been done to you. Always. What have you done is much harder to answer than what has been done to you. Why is that? The individual explains to himself so hard why he has done everything that he eventually puts pressure on himself, you might say. He gets all sorts of odd mental reactions. He says consistently and continually, I have done this, I have done that, because all of this was done to me, and so he goes around wearing a lopsided head or a twisted ear or a bloody nose or something of the sort, saying, this is why I did it. And people are usually walking explanations of why they did it. And that is a service facsimile, new definition of. The service facsimile explains why you did it. People who have chronic somatic, psychosomatic illnesses, the 19th century medical profession called them, way back when they had medicos. These people were totally convinced that there was such a thing as mental duress which resulted in a physical illness. And how they knew this, I haven't got a clue, because they have no slightest proof of it. We're the only ones that have any proof of it. Now, this was just a wild, lucky guess. And everybody kind of felt it was so they left it that way. They really had no proof of it at all. Now, individuals who are ill would be the last people to admit that they were explaining something. A psychosomatic illness is simply an explanation. That's all it is. If it's a dead ex, it's more severe than if it's an overt act. Of course, the individual had to explain it after he'd done it. If he had the explanation ahead of it, it was all right. But if he had the explanation after it, in other words, he goes out and shoots a horse. You know, he just gets up one morning, he eats breakfast, and he doesn't feel good, and the breakfast wasn't bad, no reason. He just gets up, he can't find any reason for this, and he suddenly picks up a shotgun, sees the horse outside, and shoots the horse. He's liable to tell you afterwards that he had to shoot the horse because the carcass of the horse got to smelling so bad. Doesn't make sense, does it? So he twists the carcass of the horse smelling so bad around sequitur and time and tries to get an explanation for his having shot the horse. Tries to get the motivator ahead of the overt act, see? And that's a grouper. That's all a grouper is. A grouper is a jam track. It is something that jams a track. Well, the basic grouper is really not a mechanical thing. It's the overt act motivator sequence in reverse. The individual did something and then explained it and then tried to get the explanation ahead of it to be a motivator. The idea? And after an individual's gone out and killed 10 million peasants in the name of Russia, boy, I'll bet you he has to dream up about the fanciest mess you ever heard of to explain for each death what the individual did to him when the individual had done nothing to him. I bet there's somebody over in China or Russia or someplace over there right now who's got a young child, just a few years old, that's having the roughest time. Psychosomatic illnesses and all coughing and sneezing and wheezing and just having a dreadful time. And the little baby's real name is Stalin. he's trying to get it justified, you see. And he can't dream up that many motivators. An individual becomes then motivator hungry and very often goes around saying, "Execute me." You'd be amazed in trying to run an organization how many men walk up to you and say, "Execute me." So you say, "What's the matter? What's the matter? What have you done? You haven't done anything. Go on about your work." No? Lots of things to do. A few days later, you hear a dull crash outside the front door. And you look and you see one of the urns that carry the potted plants broken all over the place. And you say, "What's the matter with you?" You notice it's the same guy, you know. "What's the matter? What'd you drop that for?" "It's the idea." He'll say, "Execute me." And you get him to sweep the thing up, see? You get him to sweep it all up, square it up. A few days go by, and there's a resounding crash down in the corner, and you look out and find the organization station wagon lying all over the street. And this guy is the driver of it. Don't bother to ask why he did it. He wants to be executed. Well, when you understand this, you actually can go on executing people. Now, wherever we look in life, we find this "execute me," or the overt act motivator sequence, or psychosomatic illness, and so forth. And all of it comes out as an imbalance between what has been done to the person and what the person has done to others. An optimum solution is the greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics. Very few people operate on an optimum solution. You find that in book one. Very few people operate on an optimum solution. The state of a case can be told just like that by getting the individual to make an instantaneous computation on a fictitious situation. You say, "All right, fictitious situation. Driver came along, knocked down a young girl. What's the solution?" "Well, people shouldn't be permitted to drive." See, that's an inverted solution. See, it's a negative dynamic. Another person says, "Little children should be kept out of the street." Second dynamic is as high as that one goes. Probably an inverted second, because restrained communications. Somebody comes along and says, "The government should take responsibility for these accidents and should execute every driver." Inverted third. None of those are optimum solutions. "The government and public should take responsibility for vehicles and children and should permit people to familiarize themselves sufficiently with driving and with streets and permit children sufficiently familiarize themselves with streets and traffic and so forth so that they wouldn't come into collision. It's something in the order of an optimum solution. Now, the state of case, it's just the snap answer of what is the optimum solution. How many dynamics does it include? Well, every time an individual has short-solutioned it, cut down the number of dynamics that were bettered by his solution, he has more and more approached something like an absolute overt act. Now, an absolute overt act can be defined. It would be something destructive on all eight dynamics. Internal revenue. Now, here we have this picture of a total overt act. Now, let's narrow it down and say, well, a mother kills a baby. Well, that'd be pretty bad crime, maybe, but it actually is an overt act, really only on the first and second and slightly on the third dynamic. It only covers three, so there could be worse things than that. See, it injures the group by depriving of another person, although if it happened in India, this would be questionable. The second dynamic, it definitely defies the second dynamic. And certainly, it definitely defies her first dynamic. So it's bad on three dynamics. Now, an individual takes to drink and drinks himself senseless every day. That's an overt act, but it's an overt act on the first dynamic. Society rather looks tolerantly at this one. You'll find societies at large rather trail along with this optimum solution. You can more or less figure out what a society considers bad by how many dynamics does it offend against. Now, if we look at motivators, we'll find that we seldom get a balance. The individual has to drive himself into being numerous dynamics in order to get a balance of overt act versus motivator. He destroys a group utterly. How's he going to get a motivator? He's a first and seventh dynamic. That's the most this person is. See, he's himself as a man, and he's himself as a spirit. Seventh dynamic. First dynamic, seventh dynamic. All right, now how's he going to get a motivator big enough to justify having destroyed this group? Well, he's going to have to be a group, isn't he? You'll find people going around being groups. It's quite fabulous. They have to be a group in order to get a motivator, something to happen to them to justify their having slain a group. You get the idea? If they get a balance up going of this character, they really go round the bend, because an individual is never a group. That is why war brings about such esprit, because you have individuals committing an overt act against a larger group called a nation, so that the individual has no choice but to become himself kind of his own nation. Got the idea? Do you see this clearly? An individual then gets shifted around in various dynamics in order to answer up to his overt acts against the various dynamics. The overt act against self, against the family, children, sex, against the group, against mankind, fifth dynamic, against animal kingdom, sixth dynamic, against the physical universe, seventh dynamic, against the spirit, eighth dynamic, infinity. Now, what kind of a mess do you get on some individual who has been perhaps the chief executioner of a nation? Where are you going to find this boy on the track? What state are you going to find him in? In the first place, he has done a horrible thing. He has said, the acts I am engaged on are official acts and are the overt acts of the nation I work for. Makes him totally irresponsible for his own acts, doesn't it? Now look, I'm not going as far as to say that the reason we have insane governments is because no public official is personally responsible for his acts. But the definition of an insane man is one who is not personally responsible for his own acts. Do you agree with that? No, I won't go so far as to say that. This does not automatically make all public officials insane. But they'll get there. Now, the individual was almost wiped out the day that somebody invented a thing called an official act. Now, it was an official act that was an invention. That was the invented thing. Nobody invented a personal act. But somebody invented this thing called an official act. That says, an act I am doing for another dynamic for which I have no responsibility of any kind. The guy piles up enough of those, he's had it. Because he doesn't take any responsibility for the things. Now, he has to get irresponsible motivators to balance it up. And that's pretty hard to do. He has to get hit by hit-and-run drivers that were drunk, and he has to always have something happening to him that he didn't have anything to do with. You see how this would work? Well, this is quite interesting, the whole subject of overt acts and motivators. Because it's what balls up a time track. It's the basic grouper. It's basically occlusion. That's occlusion. The final philosophy of occlusion is all contained in this thing. It's the idea of being trapped. It's interesting how a thetan gets trapped. He gets totally convinced that theta traps are trapping thetans. So then he goes around committing overt acts against theta traps. And after that, he can get trapped. Only after that can he get trapped. A theta trap just doesn't trap somebody. In other words, you can't be trapped without having had an overt act against that which traps you. You can't have an unfortunate marriage without having just blown a marriage sky wide and handsome. Got the idea? Now, because you don't know about it, doesn't interfere with your case at all. You can say, I don't know anything about this. It was lives ago, and things were tough in those days, and it isn't anything I could do about it. Well, I guess if we get all that, all of a sudden you get married and you feel trapped. You say, well, what's this? Well, it must be that I'm a victim. I am now a victim. Best answer for it. But listen, having committed an overt act against the institution of marriage and woman, this man thereafter, consistently and continually, will dramatize his overt acts. He'll just commit more and more and more overt acts. But the funny part of it is, the more overt acts he commits, the more motivators he's got to have. Thus, he makes himself ill. Thus, he drives himself around the bend. This girl was known as Arsenic Mary in the newspapers of Elizabethan days. Arsenic had just been invented as a poison. Rather effective method of divorce. She She got the happy idea. She wanted money. She'd been poor for a very long time. Girlfriend of Nell Gwynn's or something like that. And she said, well, I don't know. Best thing to do is marry this guy. And I inherit all of his loot. Simple. So she bumped off a half a dozen husbands, inherited all their fortunes, was very rich, and lived to a ripe old age, totally undetected. Advisor to the queen and all that sort of thing, you know? Terrific, you know? Great life. Big success. In 1959, she says to her husband, unexpectedly one day, you're trying to poison me. Psychiatry would have said she's insane. She's not insane. She's trying to accumulate a motivator that she's needed for a long time. And she doesn't even know that she needs it. She's not even being delusory. There's nothing more horribly sensible than a reactive mind. The most sensible mechanism you ever heard of. Wonderful mechanism. Totally accurate. She knows that in order to get over the sick feeling in the pit of her stomach, she'll have to be poisoned a few times. So she goes to her local medico. He starts feeding her concoctions. Well, here he says there's some very mysterious remedy that antibiotic it is. And many people have worked on this, and it's very expensive. And Park Libby only get about a $10 profit every time I sell one of these things. But it just tastes horrible. Says, boy, that's the stuff for me. Bottle after bottle of this stuff, see? Boy, wonderful. Probably every drunkard has made people into slaves by pushing alcohol down their throats. It's wonderfully literal, this whole thing. Awfully condemnatory, too. But if you want to solve human ills, you'd better understand this, because man condemns himself more than any judge or jury will ever do. He has an instinct for what is right. He has an instinct for what is wrong. And it's based on the eight dynamics. The eight dynamics, morals, ethics, these things all go hand in hand. He knows when he is doing right. But after he has committed too many overt acts, and when he cannot get enough motivators, then he says to himself, there's nothing I can do about paying my debt to society, so it doesn't matter what I do, and you get a criminal. He's already had to decide that. He couldn't make it come out even. He couldn't suffer as much as he'd made people suffer. And so he had to just say, well, it doesn't matter what I do now. Now he really goes in for overt acts, only out of total irresponsibility. I had a criminal one time. I was processing. Judges sometimes turn criminals over to me. And one poor fellow had to walk about 1,000 miles, or more than that. Judge told him, well, if you go down there and see Hubbard, why, I'll let you off. You promised to go. The guy promised to go. He didn't have a dime, and he hitchhiked his way all the way down to where I was. When he arrives, what am I supposed to do with him, you know? Society doesn't make any allowances for anybody trying to help anybody. They just appropriate to the imported German scientists. This criminal, not this particular one, but another criminal I picked up one day, had a paralyzed Right arm. Overt act motivator sequence. Darndest thing you ever saw. The individual would say, well, how did he make his living? Well, he gets a hold of a guy and he takes him down an alley. And he hits him with his fist. Left fist by now. Hits him with his fist and takes his money away from him and goes off. And that is the way he makes a living. He's already got one arm paralyzed and the other arm is getting paralyzed, but the guy never adds it up. Every time he hits a man, his paralysis gets just a little bit worse. Get the idea? No matter what his reaction to his own overt acts are, they continue. And the reaction continues to multiply. Very, very interesting. This particular fellow, I got the key in this life. He had been awakened suddenly by his mother, and he'd hauled off to hit her and realized it was his mother, and he held his fist back. That was an overt act he couldn't commit. I also found the one he was dramatizing. Every time he'd sell newspapers, as a little boy, he'd finish selling the newspapers, and a tough neighborhood bully would come around, probably in front of the local gendarmerie, the cops, and beat him up and take his money away from him, and he'd just been dramatizing this ever since. But, of course, it went back so long, and he'd been doing this for so many lives that just to run those engrams didn't solve the case at all. I gave him a little more flexibility in the arm, and then I said, well, why? This guy's got himself partially checked already. If I don't want to go ahead and solve the whole case, why, leave him that way. He's got it partially solved, which is paralysis. All he had to do is paralyze his arm. Maybe he wouldn't do it someday. At the same time, he's saying, well, it doesn't matter what I do. He goes ahead, nothing I can do about it, so it doesn't matter what I do. This is very interesting, isn't it? This overt act motivator sequence. We've known about it for years and years. We didn't know totally what it amounted to. Well, it amounts to many things. The grouper, the occluded case, that sort of thing. Well, how do you handle one of these things? Pretty easy to do. There's an auditing command that goes along with it. It's what have you done to somebody? Or recall something you have done to somebody. Just keep asking somebody that. If you go more mildly than that even, you say, just what have you done? Recall after recall after recall, run as any other straight wire process. Get him to locate when it was. Nail it down in the track with an e-meter if you want to. You see? Because what have you done? 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 Individual feel better and better, and the bank will get looser and looser, and the pressure will decrease more and more. But the fellow who's really under duress, being crushed, being extremely kind to everybody, too, very often, only that isn't necessary part of it at all, because that's a rather natural state, to be kind to people. I love the psychologist. I hope nothing serious ever happens to him in your hands. The worst that could happen to him, I don't think he deserves good auditing. I think he only ought to be audited by first week students. He'd make it someday, even in spite of this, but he shouldn't have any easy course of it because he won't take an easy course of it. His motivators are not sufficient. But he tells us that man is a ravening beast. He's an animal. Freud, in a Victorian age, conceived man to have this horrible monster parked someplace down, I think it was just under the left ear. And this horrible monster was all the time plotting. I don't know what kind of a circuit Freud had, but it certainly plotted. And he had a censor that restrained the fellow, probably Freud's father. You know. Boy, he had the most populated head of any man I ever heard of. Circuits and valences, circuits and valences. It's by the ton. But the truth of the matter is that man is not a ravening beast. Man is not evil. But doing to others what others then consider evil, That's the exact course of it. The individual conceives of himself as having done evil. And if he weren't good, and if he weren't basically something that was kind and decent, he would never protest against an evil or wrong act, would he? Would he make himself sick just because he'd done something evil if he weren't basically good? And this is one of the greatest proofs there is for the basic nature of man. Now you start cleaning this case up. This case is all scrunched up in a ball, you know. And you say, what have you done? And the fellow says, what have I done? What have I done? What have I done? What have I done? Nothing. 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 I haven't done anything. Here I sit, just poor little old victim. What they've done to me is terrible, but what I've done, nothing. You say, there, there. Thank you, thank you. I'll repeat the auditing question. What have you done? I'll repeat the auditing question. What have you done? Not unusual to get an answer like this as your first answer. I think I murdered my father. And he thinks for a while. No, I couldn't have done that. He's still alive. Let's see, what have I done? I don't know. I don't ever recall having done anything. Sometimes half an hour, 45 minute, hour comm lag. And he finally says, well, as a little boy, I hit another little boy with a switch. Next answer, maybe 15, 20 minutes later. I said some naughty words to my sister. Next answer, 4 or 5 minutes later. I stole some money once, 5 cents from my mother's dresser. Next answer, about 1 minute later. Well, I don't think I ought to tell you this. What? Well, I don't think I ought to tell you this. Well, all right, you can go ahead and tell me. Auditor's code and all that, you know. The reason I haven't had a successful marriage, I've never thought about it before, but the reason I haven't had a successful marriage is because I beat my wife every night. All of a sudden he says, man, he says, feel like something's lifted right off my chest. You said it, something was lifted off of his chest. You lifted a whole bunch of motivators right off of his chest. And he had to have these pulled in to justify what he was doing, but he was doing what he couldn't account for, and he didn't even remember doing it when you first asked him. It wasn't that he didn't want to admit to it, he just didn't remember that he did it. You say, but the guy every night beats his wife, and he doesn't remember it the next day. That's true, though. And this guy isn't insane. We're not talking about the abnormal personality. We leave that to the psychiatrist. This guy isn't around the bend or up the spout. He's not insane. He's holding down a job and probably doing well in life. This isn't necessarily true that every occluded case beats his wife every night. That's too big a generality. Maybe every other night. And maybe it isn't his wife that he beats, but his dog. But he's doing something rather obsessively to somebody somewhere, and it sometimes takes an auditor a long time to dig it up. When you say, recall an ARC break, this one, You generally pick up the motivator and the overt act at the same time. Who is it an ARC break with? And you very often say himself, and that's really what an overt act is always. It's an ARC break with self. It's the first dynamic ARC break. You ask anybody who's doing something bad. He says, I know how I ought to act, but I can't seem to act that way. When he's really round the bend, he does not know how he should act. He does not know he is acting, and he doesn't even know if he's there. But he's going the same distance. It doesn't mean that a person, by stacking up overt acts endlessly, will eventually go insane. He can probably hold out for generations and generations and generations, and then all of a sudden something happens, he gets blown up or something. He figures, boy, he says, that's enough motivator. That's enough motivator. He just skips the whole thing, and until an auditor goes back into it again, he'll have laid it aside. But it is imposing between him and getting clear. He'll hit it sooner or later, even though he's laid it aside. This fellow who blew up a galaxy in his early youth. How about that guy? You'll find him usually being suns and moons and stars when you start to audit him. He's having to be a galaxy so that he can have a motivator on galaxies. Get the idea? An individual, to get paid back, has to be the victim. He shoots a fellow, then in order to get paid back for having shot a fellow, which is an overt act, then he himself has to get shot. And it's the most amazing thing, if you read men's histories, you read biographies, and the biography doesn't connect it up for you at all. Mr. Snodgrass, this biography of a famous man, you know, Mr. Snodgrass, fought a duel with Jacob Snort, his partner, and drilled him through the chest and killed him dead. And you read on to the end of the book, you know, you read this in the book, and then you read on to the end of the book, and Mr. Snodgrass died of consumption at the age of 42. Well, this isn't apparent because they're only dealing with one life and you don't have the data, you see. But what's consumption? It's undoubtedly a hole in his chest. He's picked up an engram on the track where he got shot and matched it up with shooting his partner and paid himself back. It's weird. It's weird. In other words, he figured it all out. Now, once in a while, you will see this one. The guy goes out and shoots somebody and then a few days later, you'll find this individual walking in with an unloaded gun or something of the sort and getting shot. And nobody can figure out why his gun isn't loaded. He couldn't figure it out either if he was still alive to talk. See, he just accidentally doesn't load his gun. You know, he puts a gun in the holster and goes out and gets shot. I'm sure there were some early U.S. Gunmen of one kind or another who did just these things, you see. Now, once in a while, it takes an unusual circumstance. It has to be called to a fellow's attention after many lives that he is now still engaged in doing overt acts. While Bill Hickok is such an interesting example. He shoots how many men? 75 men, something on this order. And then one day he hears a fight in the bar room down the street. He's got a young deputy that he likes very well. He tells the deputy to stay in the office. He'll go take care of the fight in the bar room. So he races down the street, goes into the bar room, and starts to get the quarrel all padded into condition. And his young deputy, thinking something is wrong, I think a shot gets fired in the bar room. The young deputy comes tearing in, enters by a side door, and Wild Bill Hickok, without thinking or anything, kills the young deputy. He never killed another man. That was his 76th man, I think. He never killed another man. Well, now we can understand that. That's totally understandable. But it means that after that, he felt bad about killing a man, so thereafter he restrained himself. No, sir, killing that young deputy keyed him in. He'd felt bad about killing a lot of people. And the funny part of it is right down below, every one of the 75 men he killed, he felt bad about it. Got it? Except he was now so much obsessively dramatizing overt acts that he couldn't stop or even examine it or even be aware of it. And before that man's memory could be recovered, Before that man could be straightened out, before that man Wild Bill Hickok could have been cleared, you'd have had to pull a whole track apart on the subject of overt acts and motivators. And when you got it straightened out, you would have had it made. This is one of the reasons help works so effectively on cases. It sort of handles these things in a high generality. But the truth of the matter is that too many men have profited by this mechanism for it to be used again in Scientology as a way to make you good. Funny part of it is once you understand it, you don't have to be good. But once you understand it completely and get it run, you are good and there's nothing you can do about it. You have no wish or desire to be evil. So it's a self-protecting mechanism. You shouldn't go around saying, I mustn't step on a cockroach because I'll then have to become a cockroach so I can get stepped on. I wouldn't say that that is going on Earth today. Why do you suppose they talk in India about reincarnation into cockroaches? They themselves are terrified of stepping on cockroaches. How many cockroaches do you suppose the average Indian in the last 40 or 50 generations has killed? Here's a country that's crawling with them. You can't eat your dinner without a liberal sprinkling of cockroaches. I hate to mention it. But their overt acts against insects get so high that they thereafter consider all insects untouchable. You know, they must safeguard all insects. They mustn't kill anything. They eat beef to such a degree that they must kill no cows. Get the idea? And then maybe you find them being a sacred cow in one lifetime, see if they can't get it paid off. But they can't get it paid off because nobody will touch a sacred cow. Boy, you'd be a popular man in India if you'd go around and say one of the darndest things. Nobody could figure out why you're so popular either. Nobody could figure out why you're so popular. You'd say, we ought to kill all the sacred cows in India. Now, right away, you'd look for everybody to attack you. You'd get even more popular if you said, we not only should kill them all, we should torture them before we kill them. And there you get cruel leadership. And why it triumphs quite often in a society. This explains the mechanism of very savage, brutal leadership that sometimes man adopts or elects. They're electing something that will give them enough motivators. Anyone in a position of leadership in any society is sooner or later going to be elected an executioner. The hardest thing in the world is to keep from being an executioner. My Lord, the candidates. They drag in their own headsman's blocks and axes. They coil the hemp up on your desk in front of you. Every once in a while when you shoot somebody just out of hand, apparently, this guy just asked to be executed and asked to be executed and you couldn't get any work done. So you executed him, you know? Boy, after that, you're apt to be more popular than you were before. And this is pretty hard to understand. But in an aberrated society, men are motivator hungry. And where a society has a great deal of peace, where everything's all being very smooth, people get unhappy and start to key themselves in because the only thing they have for motivators in that society are their engrams. You see that? So again, we have another mechanism explained. Why a society which is calm and peaceful goes psychotic. Simple. Man was made to have his life threatened three times a day. If nothing will threaten it three times a day, then he will. Well, as we examine the overt act motivator sequence, we see many cases opening up that wouldn't have opened before. Let's just find out what these fellows have done and what's been done to them. Now, it's necessary to find out what's been done to them in order to keep the balance going. It isn't possible, I do not believe, to run one side of the overt act motivator sequence only. The other side will inevitably come up. Hence, ARC break, straight wire, understood by Scientology to be the overt act or the motivator, either way, actually runs further, but isn't quite the same as what have you done and what's been done to you. They're a little bit different, don't you see? Neither one totally embraces the other. They both get there, however. Now, if you were running somebody who didn't know anything about Scientologies, couldn't talk it, and it was ARC break, he didn't know what an ARC break is. Funny, though, most people seem to know very quickly. You would certainly have to run what have you done, or recall something you have done to somebody. And you'd have to intersperse this occasionally with what has been done to you. But not as many as the other, because the motivators are more precious. The overt acts he will surrender better. Now, here is an interesting mechanism with regard to overt acts and motivators, just completely aside, but just as a footnote, this lecture. You know that an individual can get an ARC break with you without you ever doing anything to him. Do you know that? You know how this happens? You look like somebody or something that he knew once in the 10th century or something like that. Or inadvertently, he does something to you. Inadvertently, he does something to you. This gives him an ARC break with you. You don't even know about it. Got that? All right, in a very short time afterwards, the individual, now having one overt act against you, will do another one. But now he gets even madder at you. You haven't done anything to him yet. So he goes along the line a little bit further and he does something else to you. Now he's good and mad at you. Boy, is he provoked. You haven't even found out about it. And all of a sudden you're faced with this raging tiger. Boy, is he sore at you. Man, are you a villain. You haven't done a thing. Now this guy's got to dream up all sorts of corny reasons why he's this way to you. He'll say it's your shoelaces, or he does not like you, Dr. Fell. The psychologist's top explanation of this was, I do not like you, Dr. Fell. Exactly why I cannot tell, but I do not like you, Dr. Fell, Dr. Fell. And on that, they fell down. This was their highest tide of reason in the 19th century. Now, it's very explainable. The guy commits an overt act against you and then decides he doesn't like you. And then he commits another overt act against you and he decides there's something awfully wrong with you. And then he commits another overt act against you and begins to lie to you, about you, to everybody. Isn't this fascinating? In other words, who's the dramati persona of this particular drama? Just him. There's no interchange going on here at all. Here you are, you come to work, and here's a stenographer. Stenographer sitting at the desk and working for you. And you notice day by day that she is a little more snippy to you. She's probably stealing the rubber bands. See, what happened was she stole a rubber band and she didn't realize that she had stolen the rubber band until she got away from the office. Then she realized she had done an overt act against you by stealing one of the rubber bands. You got the idea? But this was reason enough to steal another rubber band. And every rubber band that she steals against you, the more she hates you. Isn't that fascinating? If you're smart, you never let yourself get put in a position where people are doing overt acts against you without you acting. The least you do is give them a motivator. I've looked. I don't use this sort of thing against people, but just as a little gag, I've looked at somebody very fixedly and says, I know why you don't like me. This person says, Yes, don't you remember years ago when I refused to give you that loan you asked for? There's no such incident, see? And they go... It done over at Axe again, you see. And I give them a motivator ahead of the fact. Totally false motivator. And they go around being sorrowful about the loan for days. This is very remarkable. Well, anyway, overt act motivator sequence explains a great deal about marriage. Husband does something to the wife she doesn't even know about. The next thing you know, he's mad at the wife. But he's the one that did something to the wife. Now, the days go on, and he does more and more to the wife, and he gets madder and madder at the wife. And the months and years go on, and he gets more and more and more and more impatient and upset with the wife. She doesn't even know what's going on. Pretty wild, huh? Similarly, why, she's out at a party. He's out at a party. And she goes out in the garden, and there's a young man out in the garden, and he gives her a quick kiss, you see. It's something she can't tell her husband. And gives a quick kiss, and she says, you know. And then she's done an overt act against her husband, see. Well, a few more parties, a few more kisses, and what happens, happens. And the next thing you know, she's just furious with this guy. She could just kill him. Why? He doesn't give her any motivators. One of the best explanations, but the fact of the matter is, she just simply gets in a tearing fury against him. You'll find almost any marriage would clean up, totally and completely, utterly. You'd find almost any marriage would clean up if you just cleaned up the motivators and overt acts. You think, well, the marital partner couldn't take it. The funny part of it is, the marital partner probably knows all about it. Or something about it already. Now, where an individual is faced with a disintegrating personal relationship, it is true that he may not have the answer to it. It may lie totally with the other side. You get the idea? He may have no data on it at all. The relationship is disintegrating. If the relationship is disintegrating and he honestly knows that he hasn't done anything to disintegrate it, then he must know one thing, that somebody is pulling an overt act against him consistently and continually that deteriorates the relationship. If he wants to repair the relationship, all he's got to do is get an e-meter and get the person to tell him what they can't tell him. Confess a few of the overt acts, clean them up. Or if he himself finds his relationship is disintegrating, actually, all he has to do anywhere along the line is simply clean up the comm lines. Tell the person why he's so mad at the person. You say that'd blow it all up. A very funny thing, to my knowledge, it certainly never has. Do you get this? Now, with this understanding becomes the whole of, the whole science keeping marriages together, keeping families together. Why do kids get so mad at their parents in the teens? They pull enough overt acts against them. Time they get into their teens, they're furious with them. Parents haven't done anything much to them. Get the idea? Anytime you permit this situation to become overbalanced, in either direction, overt act, motivator sequence, on either party, once you break the comm lines of any social relationship between these two, you then have a deteriorated personal relationship. And this is the only reason you have a deteriorated personal relationship with anyone, anywhere. Either you are pulling overt acts against them they don't know about, or they're pulling them against you that you don't know about. All you have to do, straighten it up, clean it up, you got it made. It's a wonderful feeling to be right with the world. Thank you.